It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Bill Price, Big Tech.
The knives are out for everybody, and I hate to say it, but we told you this was coming.
That is our top story at noon. Big Tech continues to muzzle conservative voices across the country in the aftermath of last week's violent protests at the U.S. Capitol.
You may remember the Red Wedding in Game of Thrones when they took out about half the characters. Well, we're seeing a red wedding of social media right now. They are trying to take out every counter voice.
Tech analyst Dave Rubin says Big Tech is using the riots last week at the Capitol to do what they've always wanted to do. Silence the conservative voice in America.
This does not matter what you think about Trump. It doesn't matter what you think about the last couple days on Capitol Hill. They're showing you, hey, we can come for anybody, and everyone should be standing up.
Oklahoma Republican Senator James Lankford says Big Tech is dividing the country when it comes to what Americans do online.
The way that Twitter and Facebook are going, there will be a rise of a conservative social media and a liberal social media. That doesn't help us long term to be able to have American dialogue with each other. But that's the rise.
Last night, Google, Apple, and Amazon banned the conservative site Parler from their services, essentially shutting down the entire platform. Senator Lankford says Big Tech has now labeled all President Trump supporters as dangerous.
You cannot say that every single person on Parler is evil and an inciting riots. You cannot say that. That is toxic to our culture, to a group of people that said they started their companies based on wanting people to be able to connect with each other and connect with family and friends and to have dialogue. Now they're doing everything they can to be able to stop it.
Charlie Kirk is founder of Turning Point USA. He says it's telling when most of Silicon Valley takes aim at a tiny startup alternative to Twitter and Facebook.
Parler was attacked not just by one company, not two companies, but three multi-trillion dollar companies. Think about that. A small competitor that was trying to offer an alternative to Twitter was all of a sudden not allowed to be on the Apple Store, the Google Store, not allowed to be hosted on Amazon Web Services. That is collusion.
Last week, Facebook and Twitter removed President Trump from their platforms following the violence at the Capitol. Since then, other big tech companies have moved to silence online conservative voices. Now to the impeachment effort, Democrats have begun the push to punish the president for last week's deadly riots at the Capitol. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says they'll pursue impeachment this week if President Trump isn't removed from office.
This president is guilty of inciting insurrection.
While a handful of Republicans are backing the Democratic effort to remove President Trump with just 9 days to go before the next administration, most say the move could incite more violence. Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz.
This impeachment would be unnecessary. It would be divisive. And it's only being done because Democrats want to keep the focus on President Trump.
George Washington University law professor Jonathan Turley says there was nothing in President Trump's speech last week that incited a riot.
He doesn't call for violence in the speech. He, in fact, tells his followers to be peaceful. He says the reason they should go to the Capitol is to support members who are challenging the election and to encourage other members to join them. So the speech itself would not meet any definition as a criminal matter of incitement.
Turley says while President Trump's speech may have been reckless, it was far from being criminal. He also says President-elect Biden missed a golden opportunity last week to help unify the country by not condemning Democratic calls to impeach President Trump. Dozens of rioters have now been arrested since last week's rampage.
The FBI has been using photos and video to track down those involved in the assault. Sunday, arresting two men who allegedly took plastic restraints into the Capitol.
That's Nancy Chan reporting. Former acting ICE director Tom Homan says the police officers who guarded the Capitol last Wednesday were heroes in his book.
I'm friends with a lot of those officers. I talked to them. This is a fairy leadership. The men and women stood there on the front line. They were assaulted. They took a fight on. They protected the members of Congress. No one member of Congress was hurt, but the officers were hurt because they did their job. They're patriots or American heroes.
Homan says the police asked for for help from the National Guard last Wednesday, but that request was turned down. The COVID crisis has reached the boiling point in Southern California, where hospitals are admitting infected patients faster than they can discharge them. And refrigerated trucks are now being used as makeshift morgues.
They just die and they fight dying.
L.A. County smashing COVID records with 900,000 infected and 12,000 deaths. Officials say 200 people every single day are dying from the virus in Los Angeles. In Chicago, some teachers headed back to the classroom for the first time in nearly a year today. Those who don't go back don't get paid.
CEO does not care about my health and safety, does not care about the health and safety of my students, but is making me decide between getting paid or life and death of myself and my family.
Nearly 30,000 people in the U.S. have died from COVID in the first 10 days of the new year. Two of college football's most storied programs hit the gridiron in tonight's national championship game from Miami. Ohio State meets top-ranked Alabama and head coach Nick Saban.
We're pleased with the way, you know, this season has gone and the number of games we've been able to play and the players having the opportunity to compete and now to culminate it with actually a playoff and a championship game.
Saban going for his sixth national championship as head coach of the Crimson Tide. Still to come this Monday, State of the State in New York, in-school learning in Pennsylvania, and Big Tech Blackout online.
Good afternoon. Tracking a few flurries over the next 24 hours, but any major winter weather is still some days away. I'll be back with the complete forecast in 10 minutes.
Okay, Kevin Williams checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania. Monday, January 11th, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo delivering his 11th annual State of the State address right now. The Democrat once again calling for the legalization of recreational marijuana. Democratic Assemblyman Harry Bronson says the move would result in $300 million a year in much-needed tax revenue.
Specifically will identify tax revenues through the marijuana industry to go into neighborhoods, in particular urban neighborhoods, so here in the city of Rochester, to help out those communities.
Bronson says the revenue from legalized pot could help offset the economic drain caused by those COVID-19 shutdowns. But Republican Assemblyman Steve Hawley is skeptical about the projected budget boom.
All we need to do is look at the states that have already legalized this. The general theme has been that the revenues that have been hyped, if you will, they're not what other states were anticipating. And I think that we need to learn from others' mistakes.
Governor Cuomo also unveiling a package of reforms this afternoon aimed at streamlining the use of mail-in ballots that have caused such an uproar across the country. The New York State budget is due April 1st. Apple, Google, Amazon, they've all pulled the plug on the social media site Parler in the aftermath of last week's violent protests at the U.S. Capitol. Parler CEO John Mates.
It's devastating is what it is, and it's an assault on everybody. They made an attempt to not only kill the apps, but to actually destroy the entire company. They could destroy anybody. If they did this to any app, any company, it would completely destroy them.
The move follows Twitter and Facebook bans on President Trump. Pennsylvania Senator Pat Toomey calling for the president to step down in the aftermath of last week's riots.
It's the best path forward, the best way to get this person in the rearview mirror.
The Republican lawmaker has been at odds with the president ever since the election. Toomey says Mr. Trump should never hold political office again.
The president has disqualified himself from ever certainly serving in office again. I don't think he is electable in any way.
Toomey says impeaching President Trump at this point, though, probably won't happen with just 9 days to go before the new administration takes over. Western New York Republican Congressman Chris Jacobs facing backlash from state Democratic leaders for his vote last week to challenge the results of the 2020 election.
I thought the debate we were having actually prior to this terrible thing happened was very healthy. I was under no illusion that the election was going to change.
But for daring to challenge the results of the 2020 presidential election, Congressman Jacobs now facing calls to resign from Assembly Speaker Crystal Peoples Stokes and other Democratic state lawmakers.
People say there's no evidence of of voter fraud. There's definitely evidence of voter fraud.
Seven Democratic state lawmakers have now signed a letter asking for Congressman Jacobs to step down for challenging the presidential election. Buffalo Democrat Pat Burke, one of those lawmakers.
I think it's nothing short of traitorous and an attempt to steal the election from the American people.
Burke claims that by challenging the last election, Congressman Jacobs was casting a vote against democracy and spreading a dangerous lie. Now to COVID, the next phase in the vaccine rollout began today in New York with more essential workers and those over the age of 75 getting the jab.
We're signed up to do at least 50 vaccinations a day.
Dr. Nilesh Patel, a pharmacist from Rochester, he's going to be helping to vaccinate the next group of people in the state, which will include teachers. Adam Urbanski is with the Rochester Teachers Union.
I'm not surprised that the governor has agreed to give priority to teachers and that he respects the role and the advocacy of the unions to play some sort of a role in how this should roll out.
Governor Cuomo hopes to vaccinate more than 3 million New Yorkers during this next phase, which will last through mid-April. The New York State COVID-19 vaccine registration website now accepting registrations for the shot. To access that site, you'll need to download the Am I Eligible app. That app will allow you to schedule an appointment to get the vaccine. The shot now open to teachers, first responders, and anyone over the age of 75. Governor Cuomo says it'll take 14 weeks to complete this phase of the vaccination program. After 11 weeks of orange zone restrictions, half a dozen restaurants in Chemung County, New York, now defying the governor and opening their doors.
We're drawing the line.
I can't afford to do takeout only. Takeout does nothing for me. I need my dining room back.
It's clear this experiment is not working. We have dozens of bars and restaurants in this cluster that are emptying out their savings accounts.
Last week, Governor Cuomo admitted he could not explain why Chemung County still in the orange zone. Pennsylvania's largest teachers union now criticizing new guidance from Governor Tom Wolf. The state is encouraging schools to return elementary students to classrooms wherever and whenever possible. The state's guidance is unchanged for middle schools and high school students. Counties with substantial COVID infection rates are being recommended to continue with remote learning. The Bills move on. Wasn't pretty, but they got it done. Sunny time, your two-minute drill.
Yeah, Bill, let's start in Orchard Park, where Saturday it came down to a Hail Mary. The Bills win, holding off the Colts 27-24 behind Josh Allen, throwing for 324 yards and two touchdowns. He became the youngest quarterback in NFL history to throw for 300 yards and complete 70% of his passes in a playoff game. The Bills' first playoff win in more than a quarter of a century. But they're not done, says Josh.
This is playoff football. You got to forget about it. You got to focus on next week. Doesn't matter what we did. Back to 0-0.
The Bills will play Saturday against the Baltimore Ravens after they beat the Tennessee Titans 20-13. Buffalo would have played the Steelers, except history. The Browns had not won in Pittsburgh in 17 years. They were without their head coach due to COVID, but that's why they play the game. First play of the game.
2 yard line, and the Browns bouncing into the end zone where they wind up with a touchdown.
The Browns would increase their lead to 28-0 in the first quarter before holding on for a 48-37 win. Ben Roethlisberger threw four touchdowns, but also four interceptions. Will he be back next year?
Well, it's going to start with me and God. A lot of praying. And then, you know, a lot of talk with my family, discussions, decisions. And, you know, I still have a year left on my contract. I hope the Steelers want me back if that's the way we go.
By the way, Big Ben is scheduled to make over $41 million next year. As for the Browns, they have more work to do, says quarterback Baker Mayfield.
It's the stepping stone to where we eventually want to go. And for a lot of guys, it's a huge win. My first playoff win for starters, but nobody here is satisfied yet.
The Browns face the Kansas City Chiefs next Sunday. In the NFC, the Rams shock the Seahawks 30-20. They'll travel to Green Bay Saturday. Sunday, Drew Brees and the Saints host Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. After New Orleans beat the Bears 21-9, Tampa Bay beat Washington 31-23. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delphia.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Monday edition of the Noon Report, silencing conservatives. Big tech pulls the plug, impeaching a president. Democrats start the push and investigating the origins of COVID-19.
Allegations regarding a renowned Christian apologist have turned out to be true, disappointing, and disorienting many. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. 2 days before Christmas, Ravi Zacharias International Ministries confirmed that its founder had indeed engaged in sexual misconduct over the course of many years. Ravi, a highly regarded speaker, author, and apologist, died just a few months ago. In this initial interim report, RZIM leadership not only confirmed the allegations, but promised a full and thorough final report to come. Like so many others, I'm devastated. Ravi was not only a significant personal influence for me, he was a great friend of this ministry. There simply is no sugarcoating, no excusing, no explaining away of Ravi's behavior. It was sinful, it was wicked, and it was folly, one of the words that Proverbs uses to describe sin. Simply put, our sin makes us foolish. And of course, Ravi's sin left victims. The most harm done was directly to those women he abused, human beings made in the image of God and for whom Christ died. And other victims include family, friends, and the disillusioned many around the world who benefited from Ravi's teaching. Last week, a Breakpoint listener emailed us and asked how we should respond in cases like this when a Christian leader or teacher is caught in sexual misconduct. Is it even possible to separate the good that they've done and the truth they've taught from the person and their sin? And what about in cases like this one, when the perpetrator's gone and has no further opportunity to acknowledge his sins, to repent, or to seek forgiveness? Last week on the Breakpoint podcast, Shane Morris and I attempted to offer an answer. You can listen at breakpoint.org or wherever you get your podcast. We need not deny that Ravi's teaching helped many Christians make sense of the faith, deal with their doubts, and engage other people with the gospel to also acknowledge the truths that are revealed by this tragedy, especially the truth about who we are as fallen human beings. Pastors and Christian leaders, as Shane pointed out, are not made of finer clay than anyone else. There, but for the grace of God, could go any one of us. Another point to consider from a Christian worldview analysis level is, to borrow a phrase popularized by Christian educator Arthur Holmes, all truth is God's truth. In other words, if Ravi Zacharias ever said anything true in his life, and of course he did, he was not its source. He was only its medium. Any truth, all truth, comes from God, outside of our time, our place, our context. Now, a postmodern worldview, in contrast, relativizes truth to cultural settings or to individuals. In other words, truth is not absolute, and if truth is only dependent on the shifting sands of the attitudes, the beliefs, the perceptions of a culture or a person, well, then anything we build on it will collapse when any of those things do. The Christian view is that truth, even when delivered by sinful creatures, is as eternal and unchanging as God himself. Now, of course, that truth about truth doesn't make what's happened any less painful, any less disorienting, or any less consequential. And finally, let's be reminded again, especially those among us that have been granted some degree of leadership, we've got to remain accountable to other people. We must not trust ourselves, but only God and His Spirit. Pray for your pastor, your church leaders, your spouse, whomever else God has placed in your life, that He would protect them from the real and ever-present temptations that could harm them, harm others, or harm their witness for Christ. And please pray for Robbie's victims, for his family, and for RZIM. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
Not a bad winter day out there. Let's get to it. Meteorologist Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Well, snow's been falling around us and across the various parts of the planet, from Texas to Louisiana to the Carolinas over the weekend to parts of Western Europe, including Spain. But here, just some flurries are due short-term, but we still watch for the arrival of a strong cold front at the end of the week. And that'll bring in colder air and some lake snows for some this weekend. So the call for this afternoon, considerable cloudiness, some flurries here and there, scattered, high temperatures 30s to near 40. Tonight and tomorrow, partly cloudy in central and eastern Pennsylvania, variably cloudy elsewhere, some flurries around in western New York and central New York, and there may be a little coating to an inch in a couple spots. 20s tonight, 30s tomorrow. Wednesday will turn out partly sunny with high temperatures near 40.
All right, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. If you're just joining us, here are some of the stories we're following for you today, Monday, January 11th. Cracking down on conservatives. That is the big story this Back to Work Monday. Apple, Google, Amazon, they've all pulled the plug on Parler in the aftermath of the violent protests last week at the U.S. Capitol. The move follows Twitter and Facebook's ban of President Trump from ever using their platforms again. Here's Florida Senator Marco Rubio.
We're now living in a country where four or five companies, unelected, unaccountable, have the power, a monopoly power, to decide we're going to wipe people out. We're going to just erase them. Even if you don't like Donald Trump, that should be concerning that they have that power.
Rubio says big tech now lumping every single Trump supporter as a threat to American democracy.
The left has decided this is an opportunity to destroy the right. So if you ever voted for Donald Trump, if you ever supported anything he did, you are just as guilty as the people who went into that Capitol.
Ben Dominic at the Federalist says the courts will have to get involved here.
I think you're going to see a bunch of battles rise up, maybe even to the level of the Supreme Court, that take on these various aspects of what's going on. You're only going to see the fire, I think, continue to rise when it comes to all of these issues, because Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats in Congress, they're not interested in pouring water on this. They're not interested in tamping down on America's tensions at the moment. They're willing to throw gasoline on it.
Dominic says what big tech has done to Parler is the equivalent of the social media site having its power shut off.
We're going to shut off your electricity. We're going to shut off your ability to in any way, make your workplace function. It's not just the same as saying you can't have access to this platform or to this app store or the like. It's making it impossible for the company to even work.
Dominic says he's baffled why the U.S. Justice Department hasn't gotten involved. House Democrats began their push this week to impeach President Trump over last week's riots at the U.S. Capitol. Speaker Nancy Pelosi has given Vice President Mike Pence until the middle of this week to remove the president, or else Congress will pursue impeachment.
There is strong support in the Congress for impeaching the president a second time.
Republicans say the move could incite more violence. Here's Minnesota Congressman Tom Emmer.
Rather than looking back, let's look forward. Let's allow the president-elect to go through his inauguration.
The impeachment at this point appears to be a moot point, with just 9 days to go before Joe Biden takes office. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says he will not be taking a vote, even if the House moves to impeach. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo taking the wraps off his 11th State of the State address today. The three-term Democrat calling for progressive proposals like adult-use marijuana.
I supported it for years. I've tried to pass it.
Critics contend the money raised through marijuana legalization isn't worth the societal ills the drug would cause. The governor also calling for the legalization of online sports betting.
I'm not here to make casinos a lot of money. I'm here to raise funds for the state.
Pro-family groups fear the legalization of online sports betting will create a whole new generation of gambling addicts. Nearly 30,000 people in the U.S. have now died from the coronavirus in the first 10 days of the new year. The vaccine rollout has been spotty at best. Former FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb.
We need to try everything right now to create multiple distribution points. A lot of senior citizens aren't going to want to go to a stadium to get an inoculation. They're going to want to go to a pharmacy, a local pharmacy or a doctor's office.
Pre-K and special ed students in Chicago headed back to the classroom today for the first time in nearly a year. This teacher says she's nervous.
The CEO does not care about my health and safety, does not care about the health and safety of my students, but is making me decide between getting paid or life and death of myself and my family.
Teachers in Chicago are being told that if they don't show up, they won't be getting paid. The World Health Organization arrives in China this week to investigate the origins of the coronavirus pandemic. It's not clear whether they'll visit Wuhan, where COVID-19 was first detected in late 2019. China's communist government has strictly controlled all research at home into the origins of the virus, which has infected nearly 90 million people across the globe. 25 minutes past the hour, you're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life. And And welcome back to another edition of Issues in Education. Mondays during the Noon Report, we spotlight the issues that matter most to our public schooling families with Dr. Ralph Kerr at the Teaching and Learning Institute. A short while ago, we caught up with Ralph by Skype at TLI headquarters in Houghton, New York. Ralph, these are strange days we live in. Still, the fallout from what happened last week in our nation's capital. And regardless of your political stripes, all of us are just outraged at what occurred there. I think you would agree with that. But it's caused a lot of uncertainty in our government, and we saw that with the resignations of several cabinet members, not the least of which is our education secretary, Betsy DeVos. She is out. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm disappointed about the circumstances under which she resigned, but overall, I think she had a pretty good run as Secretary of Education. You know, she certainly battled the teachers' unions, and you know that's the case when the comment from one of the major leaders of the teachers' union was, "Good riddance, Betsy," but again, I like the fact that she encouraged school choice.
Yeah, and you know, in terms of her tenure, she served, I believe, the entire tenure of the Trump term, which is, you know, a lot of cabinet officials can't say they've done that. So she stuck out there almost to the end.
Yes, she did.
Yeah. So let's talk about the COVID crisis in our schools. Once again, Governor Cuomo has moved the goalpost for the guidance for keeping schools open during this pandemic. If you're a parent keeping score at home here, Ralph, what's the metric that New York State is now using?
I wish I could tell you what that was, Bob. You're right. The goalposts have been moved. The latest that I'm aware of is that if there is an outbreak in a school, then the school has to be prepared to test 20% of the population, which includes teachers, students, and support staff. But it's so confusing, and I can't wait for, once the governor has delivered his message today, I can't wait for the legislators to take back control in the state, because they basically gave total control to the governor months ago. Yeah. And as you know, I think that's like a dictatorship that he's developed, and that's just not right.
Yeah, and you mentioned it is a part-time legislature. They're only in session half the year, and they're in session again, and the governor, as you mentioned, is delivering that State of the State speech this afternoon. A lot of people are going to be watching is what he says in terms of public education with this pandemic still ongoing. You use terms like fiscal belt tightening. That might be an understatement this year, correct?
I don't think so. That's not going to happen. He also said that the change of the Senate at the national level has changed everything for New York State.
Yeah.
And what that means is he expects that the federal government is now going to bail the state out of all the deficits that we have. I believe he firmly believes now that the feds will come through with the money.
Well, let's head to Pennsylvania. New guidelines came out last week from the acting education secretary. He is fully on board of opening the elementary schools full-time if they can. Your thoughts on Pennsylvania's opening guidelines?
Well, I have been an advocate all along for the opening of all schools. I think the closing of the schools has been a catastrophe. The students are going to reap the negative benefits of that. And most teachers that I talk with really want schools to be open. And I think with the procedures that they have in place in most schools, that's a safe thing to do. And I would be wishing that in Pennsylvania and in New York, that all schools would open up and make it soon.
Well, Pennsylvania sports is back in business. Winter sports in New York, not so much. Is that counterpart? I know a lot of, you know, basketball players, wrestlers, hockey players are just really bummed out right now in New York State. Given the proximity of Pennsylvania to New York, and you talk about the twin tiers, and a lot of these towns are just a couple miles apart, isn't that counterproductive to have sports on one side of the border but not on the other?
Well, I don't know about that, Bob. I understand the proximity, but I don't want one state to influence the other in terms of what may be best for the state. And as I've told you before, I'm more concerned, frankly, about getting academics up and running than I am about sports. Although I'm a real advocate for sports, I'm concerned when I see schools like Canisius and others that have opened up for college sports and then had to shut down because of the spread of the virus. Mm-hmm. So I would much prefer to have schools open up for academics. And then once we see that that's going to continue to work on an ongoing basis, then let's bring the sports on, because they are really good for students, that's for sure.
And that will have to be the last word this week. But if you have questions about your local public school or just issues in education in general, Dr. Kerr would love to hear from you. His website, whyrun.org. Whyrun.org. All right, guys, great show. As always, Issues in Education comes your way Mondays during the noon report.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Well, snow's been falling around us and across the various parts of the planet over the weekend to parts of Western Europe, including Spain. But here, just some flurries are due short-term, but we still watch the arrival of a strong cold front at the end of the week. And that'll bring in colder air and some lake snows for some this weekend. So the call for this afternoon, considerable cloudiness, some flurries here and there, scattered, high temperatures, 30s to near 40. Tonight and tomorrow, partly cloudy in central and eastern Pennsylvania, variably cloudy elsewhere, some flurries around in western New York and central New York, and there may be a little coating to an inch in a couple spots. 20s tonight, 30s tomorrow. Wednesday will turn out partly sunny with high temperatures near 40.
All right, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. Finally at noon, well, one trophy has a leg up on any other award. Family Life's Brandon Dixon explains.
The wife of NFL quarterback Alex Smith had his leg brace made into a trophy to help remind them of how far they've come. In 2018, Smith suffered a brutal leg injury that required 17 surgeries to heal and had him considering amputation. He wore a brace to stabilize his leg and missed all of the 2019 season rehabbing the injury. But he returned to the field this season and helped Washington win 4 out of his 5 starts. Elizabeth gave Alex the trophy as a gift on Christmas as a symbol of triumph. Alex said it was, quote, definitely the best Christmas gift I've ever had. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Great story. Thank you, Brandon. And that is the world we live in this Monday. As always, thanks for joining us today. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to The Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.